You're listening to Have You Heard?
Empathize, engage, inquire, participate, collaborate, amplify.
Hello, I'm Caitlin Fichtner, and I'm here in the AV Lab Innovation Studio 219. Today I'm joined by Dr. Burt. Hi, Dr. Burt. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be back on campus. It's been too long. This COVID problem has affected everybody in the world. I am based in South America. I come to campus as a visiting professor in social entrepreneurship, and I'm also the project center for the IQP for Paraguay. And I'm so happy to come here, see our students, see the new cohort that's going to go to Paraguay, hopefully in March, and also to meet with other students with whom we're doing community projects here in Worcester, and also MQP projects. And very happy to be here. Thank you for having me in your program.
For sure. Thank you for coming. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, I'm born and raised in Paraguay. I come from a Spanish Latin American family, and British. That's why my last name is Burt. My grandfather was a World War I veteran who came to Paraguay after World War I to start open the Bank of London in branch in Paraguay. He married a local Paraguayan girl and stayed there. But I went to college in Northern California, where I was lucky to find the love of my life. I married an American girl, and we moved back to Paraguay 40 years ago. So we have a beautiful family, and we have three children and six grandchildren. Very, very happy. Where I come from, family is everything. It's very important. And so we navigate both cultures, Latin American and American, United States culture.
You've recently released a book called Who Owns Poverty? Can you tell us what this book is about?
Yes, when I finished my master's degree in Washington, D.C., Dory and I returned to Paraguay to start a new family and a new life. And we started the country's first nonprofit organization to help the poor. And we developed a microfinance program, which is a system of providing small loans and technical assistance to street vendors, very poor, mostly illiterate women. And we developed this program, and we discovered that the poor are more prone to overcome poverty if they are allowed to define their own poverty, if they are allowed to own their poverty in the good sense of the word. So we developed a small app that allows anybody in 20 minutes using colors and images, green for non-poor, yellow for poor, and red for non-poor, to quickly define in which areas they're doing well and in which areas they're not doing well and where they want to start working. So one given family may be yellow in income, red in savings, green in housing, green in transportation, yellow in self-esteem, and the next door family may have the opposite. So we discovered that allowing people to self-diagnose their level of poverty across many dimensions empowers people and raises their level of consciousness. So we developed this methodology. Then after the families self-diagnose their level of poverty, they develop their own family plan to overcome their deprivations. And we have been doing this in many countries in the world now. We're now in 44 countries, including developed countries like the United States, Canada, England, and Portugal. This tool is very versatile and adapts to any culture. So we work in Northern Toronto, we work in India, we work in South Africa, we work in the Philippines, we work in Brazil. And it's very powerful now that we have technology. Technology can serve to empower the poor. Everybody now has a cell phone, a smartphone. Everybody has a Facebook page, an Instagram page. That means that the excuse that the only people who have all the information are the census bureaus of the governments is no longer valid. So given that you can now reach every family in the world practically, we are now using technology to allow the poor to define their own poverty, to come up with their plan to overcome poverty, and to share their successes and best practices with other families. And it's I'm very happy now that we are partnering with some 450 organizations across these 44 countries, but we're proud to be in 18 cities in the U.S. So we're working in New Orleans, we're working in North Carolina, we're working in upstate New York, in Houston, we're working in Southern California. And the homeless in Southern California, just to give you one example, are perfectly capable of reflecting on what is good in their lives, what is not good in their lives, and try to understand why she is living in a car or why she lost her house and what she can do to overcome their problem. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that we have discovered that well-poised, well-approached anybody can overcome poverty. Of course, there are cases of mental health that need another type of treatment. But short of that, we're very encouraged by the eagerness with which low-income people want to get on with their lives and want to progress. Nobody wants not to have teeth. Nobody does not want to fix their toilet. Nobody just wants to make little money. Everybody wants to progress. There is a problem of fear and apprehension sometimes, where we have to work with, in addition to skills, we have to work with motivation, but that is not enough. We need to do peer pressure and group support, and we have to put incentives in place. In some areas, you do need government, like having a health post near your family, but in another areas, you need to have the family go to get tested when, you know, every year, or eat nutritious food, or, you know, teach the children to brush their teeth, or hang out with the right crowd. So we're very happy that if you define poverty as actionable by the person who is in poverty, then it is easier to engage them, or else it becomes a top-down government effort, and many times though it fails.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So focusing on the individual level, does that allow people to like make change faster than taking the top-down approach?
Right, and we work at an individual level, but also on a family household level. We have found that the unit of analysis that really works in most countries is the family as defined as those who sleep and eat under the same roof. So, because that is where the resources are and the support systems are. And it's very interesting to discover that the United States may have 350 million people, but it only has 100 million family households, and that makes it easier, right? And so the indicator is not food security, as governments like to define the problem, but we eat nutritious food, green, yellow, or red. You may have a program of the government called financial inclusion, but the indicator can also be we save. We have a family budget. And so you incorporate both sides of the equation, and it's more powerful that way.
So this methodology allows people to look at what indicators of poverty they have, and how do they see these indicators and then turn that into an actionable plan?
Well, the first thing that people self-diagnose themselves, the first thing they find is that they have many greens. So it's really interesting because this methodology allows people to count their blessings, Remember that? If you don't count your blessings, they don't count. So let's start from an asset strength base. You know, what's going well with my family? And many times people forget. We all forget. Sometimes we concentrate only on what's missing, only on our problems, but not on all the great things that are happening to us. And we, of course, simultaneously develop a catalog of best practices, right? There are ways to increase your family income, because how do we know? There are hundreds and hundreds of families who were able to either get a second job or go and get more training or do jobs that maybe they weren't thinking initially. So there are ways to increase, and we know that. We also work a lot with positive deviants, people who should not have been able to progress but have. So, example, sometimes you see a single mother who sent her four children to college. How did she do it? And then, of course, there are many single mothers whose kids dropped out of high school. So what happens with success stories? And so we encourage those success stories to tell their story. And we celebrate them, and they also serve as an example and as a guide to other families. Because people learn from their cohort, people who are on their same level and in their same circumstance. So if you have a degree from a university, many low-income families look at you and they say, well, you probably don't understand where I'm coming from. But another person from that same background may have a better rapport.
So I know you previously worked as the chief of staff to the president of Paraguay. How has that experience working in the government impacted the way you view eliminating poverty?
Well, that's a good question. I've had three major government jobs. I was Undersecretary of Commerce, so I know all about the imports and exports of a country and promoting foreign direct investment and trying to bring industry into the country. Then I was elected mayor of the capital of Paraguay, that is the city of Asunción, and so I learned to work with communities and empower communities to take ownership of their neighborhoods, because it is very difficult to run a city with inhabitants who don't care about the city. What you want is to transform inhabitants into citizens who take care of their park, who report a family violence incident near their house, who report if there are issues, if there are children at risk, if there are problems. This is what really makes a neighborhood a community. So inhabitants, they don't care. People need to, if they want a park, they really need to either put labor or inputs or resources there so the park is theirs. You really don't want the city park, the park to belong to the city, because then it belongs to everybody and nobody. You really want the neighbors to take care. And so when I was chief of staff to the president, I got to oversee all the cabinet and to make sure that the 15 ministries and the 85 agencies work together in transportation and in human development and education and health, you know, just to make sure that service delivery reaches everybody and that there's a coordination between all the ministries so that you have healthy people working in a country. So that was a big, and so I learned about the limitations of top-down approaches. Usually governments only measure income as the only definition of poverty, right? In my country, to be not poor, according to the government, is $3 per person per day. So a family of four needs to make $420 a month not to be poor. It's a pretty low standard in a poor country. So that would be about $5,000 a year to be not poor. In the United States, the minimum to be not poor is to earn $25,000 a year, which seems a little bit ridiculous also, because with $24,000 a year in this country, you are pretty much starve, right? Because income is not the only issue in poverty. It's the expenses, right? Rent, transportation, and many, many things. No, how do you provide educational resources, or how do you provide? I'm working a lot with micro franchises. Micro franchises, for example, a kit of cleaning supplies for $10 for the ultra poor, that they can buy it for $10, take it home, mix it with water, you know, combine it, and sell it door to door in their neighborhood and generate $20, right? Mm-hmm. And then I have developed about 13 different types of micro franchises to help people generate income. And there are many creative ways that you can help the poor help themselves, because the key is self-help. That gives dignity, that empowers people, that gives people hope. And so I'm all in favor of that. Of course, in some areas, you need government intervention. But only government intervention without the full participation and skin in the game by the interested party, in this case, the low-income family, usually is less effective than when they have they are allowed to define the problem and to help come up with the solutions.
Yeah, you've done a lot of different work helping low-income families. So what are some of the impacts you've seen your work have, and how has that motivated you?
Well, yes, and I'm very happy of this. My wife sometimes asks me in a good way, she says, aren't you like depleted or depressed by working with poor families? And I said, actually, it energizes me. It energizes me. First, I'm an extrovert, and so people energize me. But second, I see so many people lift themselves up, so I'm around wealth. You know, for a person that is earning $500, for them to go to earn $800 is a big thing for some families. And so these are success stories. We're very proud of them. And so, yes, and in addition to microfinance and providing small loans to people with absolute no credit history or no collateral or no guarantee, we have developed rural schools, agricultural high schools, that are financially self-sufficient. This is the concept of education that pays for itself. Imagine a university that doesn't charge tuition, but their classroom creates robots that can sell to industry, and with the profit there, you can cover the cost of the professor in the university. So we did that at the high school level. And so we have free high schools for the ultra-poor, mostly young farmers, who learn by doing in the classroom. You learn in the classroom how to grow tomatoes. Then you go to the vegetable garden. You grow the tomatoes, but then you put them in a bag, in a basket, and you go and sell the tomatoes, and you calculate your profit and loss. That is where the learning happens. And kids say, oh, if I have, you know, five vegetable beds for a vegetable garden, and I have a chicken coop, and I can make some cheese, you know, I can earn a living. And so there are some people who love being farmers, and there are some people who love being carpenters, and there are some people who like to be nurses, and there are some people who like to be accountants. There's room for all of us in the world, and everybody has a time and place where they can flourish. And my job is to help people flourish. That's all I want. It's very, very beautiful.
What are your goals for the future in the short term and the long term?
Well, my plans for the future are to expand the poverty stoplight to all the countries of the world and to convince governments that poverty can be eliminated in our lifetime if we mobilize all the heads of the households, usually mothers. The world is governed by mothers who are in most of the world, who are the heads of their household. In my country, we have 7 million people, but really only 1.8 million family households. A third of them are headed by single mothers. And that's a function of poverty, of early pregnancy, and the family can't stay together. The mother stays with the children. The mother has to do something to support the kids. And so my goal is to really provide tools so that people can help themselves. So, you know, I only have 44 countries now, and I don't know, they keep inventing new countries, so I'm very worried about that. But I think that the world is a very beautiful place to be. There are very many opportunities. And the reason I like WPI so much is because of its paradigm of, revolutionizing STEM education to transform lives. STEM is giving people the tools they need to solve their own problems. What can be more beautiful than that? What can be more beautiful than that? So in that way, engineers, I mean, you can do robots, and those are very beautiful things, but you can do robots to help industry make faster cars, but you can also use robots to help poor communities find water, or you can do, or grow crops, or, so there's so many applications, and I think that the beauty of WPI with project-based learning in the first year is just fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, it just challenges everything that people always thought that an 18-year-old engineering student couldn't do. Oh, really? Yes, she can. And just show her. And of course, nobody is born knowing everything. You have to train them and teach them and encourage them and motivate them. But then once they get it, they're unstoppable. You can make a living, you know, having a purpose in your life, you know, solving problems related with people or with planet, but at the same time, lead a normal life and sending your own kids to college. We have internships available. You can come to Paraguay. We have work for you to do in any area, projects, developing projects, writing projects, monitoring and evaluation, the impact of projects, executing projects in income, employment, health, education, housing. We have all the areas. And there's always a contribution that a WPI student can do. And we have been hosting WPI students on our campuses for many, many years now. And they've always learned the culture, learned the language, Spanish, and learned things that they thought that they would never be able to do.
Thank you again for coming on our podcast. I wish you great success as you strive to eliminate poverty.
Thank you very much, and I encourage you to enjoy life, live life to the fullest, fall in love, meet people who have your same ideals, and life is very beautiful. So thank you for having me in your program.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
You were just listening to Dr. Martin Burt on his book, Who Owns Poverty?
Now, 30 seconds, 30 words.
Caitlin, are you a big, like, horoscope reader? Do you read any of your sign readings during the week?
Oh, yeah. I mean, horoscopes always come true.
That's very true. Why don't we read a couple? What do you think?
Yeah. Okay. Let's go for it.
Let's start out with Scorpio, since we're in the Scorpio season already. Scorpio says, watch Squid Game or Ted Lasso before it's no longer cool to say that you have.
I've watched it. Have you?
Yeah, of course I have.
I guess we're both cool, though.
But I'm not a Scorpio, so I guess it doesn't really apply to us.
Yeah, unfortunate.
And now let's hear about the innovative projects going on here at WPI. Hi, everyone. This is Lauren Watch, joined by Raymond Magambo in the AV Lab 219. Welcome to the podcast, Raymond. Can you introduce yourself and give the listeners a brief description on the project you're working on?
Thank you so much. So my name is Raymond Magambo. I'm a business program coordinator at Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center at WPI. I recently joined the INE team, and I'm also the CEO of a company called Globalite. And Globalite runs e-ticketing platform, which is called Ticket Rafiki. Ticket Rafiki is translated as friendly ticket, and this is a mobile device application and web-based platform that allows travelers to book bus tickets in Tanzania.
Can you tell us a little bit about how this project came about?
I had this idea in 2015, where I was able to gather a team of 4 or 5 people. Then we were able to build a platform for like 7 months. Then in 2016, we officially launched it. We tried to work on the business for 3 years, but the business environment in Tanzania was not conducive. So it was very difficult for us to be successful. We had a lot of challenges, a lot of problems. So at the end of the day, because the business was not yielding results, I decided to quit. And at that time, I did bachelor's degree in computer science. But in my life, I had no plan of doing master's degree. But then when my business failed, at that moment, I thought that maybe I just need to go abroad so that I can get fresh ideas. So that's when I came to the United States. I came to WPI to get my master's degree. But the whole point was not just to come to do master's degree. The point was to get fresh ideas for my business. So when I came, I decided to look around to see if there are programs that are related with business, because I did a master's degree in information technology. That's when I got to know about Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center. I started to do their programs, and I've done so many programs, almost most of the programs, over I think 80 or 90%, because I was so much, that's my passion. So at the end of the day, I was able to meet with some of the staff, and they really inspired me to get back to my business. And at the end of the day, I just made a decision to get back to the original business idea that I had. Yeah, and it's very fortunate because now the business environment is much better. The government is supporting, because one of the challenges that we had back in the day was the payment platform, because we have a booking platform. So we need to integrate our booking platform with the payment gateway. At that, in 2015, 2016, it was a challenge because there were only 2 companies in the country offering payment gateway service, and they were super expensive. So that was one of the biggest challenges that I faced back in the days. But now the government has its own payment gateway. So our platform has been integrated with the government payment gateway. So the business environment now is better, and we'll be officially launching in December this year, on December 3rd, 2021. And we have invited the Prime Minister, the government officials, and also we're looking forward to host some staff from WPI. And we have invited different stakeholders that we work with in Tanzania. So, yeah, so we believe it's going to go well.
Wow, yes. That's great. Yeah, congratulations about
Thank
all
so
that.
Much.
I know you talked about coming here to get more fresh ideas for your business, right? But what made you passionate to start the business in the first place?
I came to realize that my passion was business. So I started doing business since when I was a secondary school student. It's because I was so much interested with business. So I was just doing business. I started doing business, not really business, but I was trying to sell some small stuff. And I remember I asked my daddy, because my daddy used to work in a hotel and he had access to small stuff like sugar sachets and milk sachets. So I told my daddy, hey, can you give me, instead of just bringing them home, when you have a chance, when they give these type of things at work, give them to me so that I can go in the street and sell them. So it started long time ago. I did different things just for the sake of doing, because it's something that I was passionate with business. Then after I graduated, when I was doing my bachelor's degree, my plan was after I graduate, I want to start my own company, get into start especially technology company, because that's an area that I was also interested in. Yeah, so it started a long time ago, but I just knew that business is my passion.
Right.
Yeah.
You've been a businessman your whole life, right?
That's what I would say.
Right.
That's what I would say.
Nice. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the challenges people face in booking tickets for transportation?
So currently in Tanzania, over 60,000 people take buses every day. Mm-hmm. And for them to be able to book bus ticket, they have to travel on average of 12.4 miles just to go book their tickets. because you have to go book your tickets, then you have to, so you have to travel in order to book your ticket, then you have to travel again on the day that you travel. I don't know if that makes sense. It's complicated, and there's a lot of harassment because most of the booking offices are located in bus stations, and these bus stations are all, most of the time they're overcrowded. So sometimes robbers take advantage of that, but also we have people who receive cash from passengers or travelers. We call them bus agents. Sometimes these bus agents harass people. So it's complicated, a lot of challenges. So with our platform, we'll be able to solve all that because you won't have to go to the booking office for you to buy bus ticket. We'll just be at home and use our mobile app.
That's great. Yeah. It's really user friendly, right? So exactly. It's easy to use for anyone.
Yeah.
That's great. So you talked a little bit how you're collaborating with the government, right? Are you collaborating with any private companies?
The way we are doing business is that we want to collaborate with as many service providers as possible to add value to what we are offering. So what we are doing is to make sure that the service that we are offering, it goes beyond the ticketing service. So for example, we work with bus operators. What we do is we invite other service providers, for example, insurance companies. We bring on board pension funds, and these other service providers will add value to what we are offering. So if you're using, if you're working with us, you are sure that you will also get some benefits from other service providers. So it's not going to be only ticket, but also there are some other services that you will get. That's our model, business model.
So have you been able to actually test your app at all in Tanzania yet?
Yes, because before you get a license in Tanzania now, for you to do this kind of business, you have to apply to the government. Then you go through a very long procedure, but they also do testing before you get a certificate. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, they give you a license. But when they give you a license, that means you have already integrated successfully with the payment gateway, but also your system has already been tested and it is working fine. So Our system has already been tested and we already have a license.
It works
a
great,
license.
Right?
Yeah, it's working
great. Have you
great.
Gotten any user feedback? Have you been able to talk to the people that are using it and see like, oh, what can we improve on? What can we change or things like that?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. So because we have not yet started to offer this service to the travelers, mm-hmm. we will start to do that in the end of, I mean, it should be November. Because at the moment, what we're doing is to sign contract with the bus operators. So that is what is happening. So we have already been licensed, but fine. Then the next step is to sign contracts. Because for you to work with the bus operators, because what happens is we don't have the buses. We only have the booking platform. So we work with the bus operators. We sign contracts with them so that travelers, when they want to use a certain bus, they then have to get ticket through our platform. So at the moment, we are signing contracts with the bus operators.
Right, yes. Before you can actually...
Yes, so before you can actually begin our service.
Right.
And
okay.
We will officially launch on December 3rd.
Yeah, yes. About your December 3rd launch. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What's going to happen there?
Yeah, so this is one of the strategies that we have to market our product nationwide. So we want people to know Ticket Rafiki. How do we get to do that? We have several strategies, but one of it was to do like an official launch where we invite the government leaders to attend our launch and different bus operators and different stakeholders that we work with. We have invited banks, we have invited insurance companies, pension funds, and some of the government agencies that are directly related to our offering, like the Minister for ICT, the Minister for Transportation. You see, those type of people who are related mm-hmm. to our offering. So during this launch, we have also invited different media, including the national television will be there, and other bloggers, the different newspapers, you see. So they will be talking about our event in their media. So that is one of the strategies that we have to make sure that people in Tanzania get to know about our service. We'll be able to have more bus operators, because the more you have more bus operators, that means more buses on board. And the more you have buses on board, that means you're increasing a chance for you to have more customers, because travelers have to book through your platform, then you should have as many buses as possible.
So for my final question, what's the ultimate goal for this app? Where do you want to see this app going?
I should say thank you, many thanks to WPI and especially Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, because they're the ones who are financially supporting my company. Yeah, they have given me seed funding, and that they are covering the cost for launch, but also even they are going to fund me more to cover my operating expenses, even for the next year. So WPI is sponsoring, is the one that is financially supporting my company. But the ultimate goal is to provide this service in Tanzania, but eventually we want to scale to different countries in Africa. So the goal is Africa, not just in Tanzania. Yeah. Because Africa has over has almost 54 countries, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's yeah. What a some goal!
People,
yeah.
Some people don't know. They think like Africa is one.
No, just one country.
But in Africa, there are over around 54 countries.
Right.
Yeah, Tanzania is one of them. Mm-hmm. So for now, our base is Tanzania, but eventually we want to scale it to different countries in Africa.
Thank you so much, Raymond, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And congratulations about your app.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me for this podcast.
You were just listening to Dr. Martin Burt on his book, Who Owns Poverty? And Raymond Magambo on his new app, Tikiti Rafiki, which is debuting in Tanzania on December 3rd. You're listening to Have You Heard?
Now, 30 seconds, 30 words.
For Leo, it says, order identical drinks from Dunkin' and Starbucks, then mix them to get the best of both worlds.
That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to try that.
Yeah, I mean, a cold brew from Dunkin' and a cold brew from Starbucks. I feel like you might not go wrong with that.
Yeah, it's just double cold brew, double
double
caffeine.
Blast of caffeine, yes.
We need that.
Empathize, engage, inquire, participate, collaborate, amplify.
You're listening to Have You Heard?
Let's head into our satire section, produced by Tech News. What's up, guys? This is the He Said, She Said portion of today's podcast. Today's question is it too early to play holiday music?
I can't believe my roommate is already listening to holiday music.
Your roommate? You mean me? Holiday music? As soon as Halloween is over, it's Christmas season.
How is it even special if you're listening to holiday music?
I think it makes the season
months.
More special, to be honest.
You have to save it for after Thanksgiving. Once you have your Christmas tree up, then you can listen, or just after Thanksgiving.
Okay, well, what if I put my Christmas tree up now? What do you say then?
I mean, I guess that's fine then.
Oh, so see? It's perfect. It doesn't matter.
I don't see your tree up.
Oh, have you been to my house?
Yes.
Well, it's up. Just kidding, not yet. It only comes up after Thanksgiving, but I feel like being in the Christmas mood. From November 1st through January 1st, if I'm being honest.
Really? Because our apartment still has pumpkins and leaves taped to the walls.
That doesn't matter. It's a feeling, Caitlin.
We gotta change the decoration to match.
Yeah, we do then. So that's something we can work on over the weekend. Don't you like listening to, like, All I Want for Christmas Is You and Winter Wonderland and Let It Snow? Those just give you all the warm feelings, the fuzzy feelings of Christmas cheer, no?
Yeah, I love the Christmas cheer after Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God. Wow. You're one of those people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
No. After Halloween ends, it's Christmas time. Thanksgiving doesn't even have any music.
What about turkey time?
Turkey time.
Haven't you heard the turkey song?
No.
The song from Charlie Brown Thanksgiving?
That's not real.
It's a song.
So sing it for us.
I don't know it, but
exactly.
I know it exists.
So you can't. You can't.
It's called
even.
The Great Pumpkin.
That's a Halloween movie.
The Great Turkey.
That's not real. That's literally not real.
You don't know that. I think there's a song about the Mayflower or something and how the pilgrims came over here.
Oh, wow.
I saw it in a movie in, like, third grade.
Wow, that's awesome, I guess. Well, Back to our real...
Would you watch a Christmas movie before Thanksgiving?
Yes, easily. I would watch a Christmas movie in July.
Which
and
one?
I did. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen all of the other reindeer?
Of course I have.
That's the best Christmas movie.
I remember you showing that to me.
Maybe if I watched that, I'd be in the mood for Christmas music.
Okay, so I know what we're doing this weekend.
Okay.
Turn on the Christmas movies. Put up the Christmas decorations. It's time. It really is.
Look, I guess if you're forcing me to, I'll listen to it.
Good. And spread that Christmas cheer. Why don't you?
Yes, spread joy and kindness and holiday spirit.
It's never too early to get into the holiday spirit. It really isn't. And if I want to enjoy Christmas music, I feel like I should be free to.
Yeah, and when do you stop listening to Christmas music?
Actually, never. I listen to it year-round, so I guess I wasn't really the person to be arguing
with. So then what's the Christmas season?
Okay, the real Christmas season is November 1st to December 25th.
So you just end right after Christmas?
No. Me personally, no. But
you recommend that you stop after December 25th?
No, I feel like Christmas should go on for like another week after Christmas. Okay. It just feels like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
at least until New Year's.
I try to leave the tree up until after I come back to school, so then my parents have to deal with it.
Oh, okay. My tree is wicked tall. It's like 7 pieces. We have a fake tree.
Oh.
I'm allergic. It's 13 feet tall.
Yeah, our tree is kind of tiny, but last year we cut it down and a bunch of mice ran out of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I can see
then
why.
Then we hosed it off in the yard and brought it in, and then it died before Christmas because we got it too early.
Oh, boy. Well, I can see why you might not be as big a fan of Christmas as I am, considering your traumatic experiences.
I like Christmas just after Thanksgiving.
No. Thanksgiving is just, you know, Thanksgiving is like middle Christmas season, in my opinion. It just happens to be there.
It's Thanksgiving season.
If there's ever a song about Thanksgiving, then I'll give you that. But there's not.
I'll just default
to Christmas music. This has been Have You Heard with Lauren Watch
and Caitlin Fickner, a collaboration between Global Lab and Tech News.
Until next time, thank you.